Hey guys, just before we get into it, we would like to acknowledge our podcast partners in Beyond Blue.
If you're feeling low, anxious, or need to talk to someone, please contact the people at Beyond Blue. Their phone number is 1300 224 636.
You can visit them on the website as well at www.beyondblue.org.au/get support. Enjoy the episode.
Thanks, guys.
Hello and welcome to the Listics AFL podcast. I'm your host, John Van Norden, and with me as always is my good friend, Sean Lewis. Sean, how are you doing this week, mate?
Oh, I'm loving today. It's my favourite day of the year, the end of trade period. So
yeah.
The culmination of 10 days of rage, outrageous trade scenarios, secretive, we don't know anything, what's happening in the background. It all comes to a head in one giant, messy finish, and the AFL's done us all a favour by not allowing any trades to be completed today until 3 p.m.
Which
is just magnificent, but it's allowed the old trade radio to flog power drills all day.
But they could, because they flog power drills all day anyway. It never made sense to me.
But it's a great day.
It is. Now, we're not going to comment on any of the trades that are going down, because really we're going to do what we did last year, which is just wait a couple of days until after the trade period is settled and we've seen what everyone's come out with, so we can judge it, I guess, in a non-emotional state.
I think we'll do something a bit like what we did last week, where we just looked at the trades that have been done and just quickly assess, and the more in-depth analysis will come probably post the draft, where we can actually sit back
and
look at the summary of the whole period.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be in the coming days, but we're definitely not going to do it tonight, given that there's still 3 hours left of trade period. So,
and there's still 40 players left to be traded, apparently.
Yeah, well, we'll see how all of that pans out, but we're here to talk about the Cats, and the Cats are probably... We can talk a little bit about what the Cats have been doing in the trade period. I mean,
as always, they're efficient and done early, so
well
done to Stephen Wells again.
Yeah, but we're going to be focusing on the 2019 Cats, and I guess it's good to reflect upon them and look at them for the way forward as well. So the Cats had an average age of 24.42, with the fourth oldest team in the competition, and the fifth most experienced team with almost 70 games experience per player.
Yep.
And they're probably going to experience up and age up again next year, but re-signing a lot of their senior players and bringing in some senior players as well.
They've had a little bit of turnover with these draft picks, but we'll go into that in a minute. So they might, I reckon they'll probably just hold more than anything, because they'll bring in, I think they've at the moment they've got a draft bounty, so they'll...
Yeah, potentially the bottom of the list will fill up with younger players.
Yep. Depth chart-wise, we've got 6 key forwards, 3 key defenders, 9 general forwards, 10 general defenders, 15 midfielders, and 3 rucks. I mean, looking at the depth, I would probably say that they're the players playing in their key posts in the best 22. If they get too many injuries, they're kind of stuffed, and their rucks have been a bit of a sore spot for the last few years for a lot of Geelong fans. So the players above 195 centimetres are probably the biggest concern I have with Geelong's list. They've got, you know, plenty through the midfield for the moment, and I'm saying for the moment for a reason, which we'll touch on in a minute. But realistically, you know, they come up against Collingwoods and Melbourne's and even GWS next year with Sauce Jacobs and Goldie and these sorts of rucks. And at the end of the day, they get pasted. It'd be lovely for their rolled gold midfield to get some silver service occasionally, I think.
But they're not trading for a ruck, though. They've already said that.
I reckon they've got their eye on Luke Jackson in the draft, personally, as I think a few clubs
do. Yeah, I know. It's not surprising, because he's the best ruck prospect to come through in a while. I think people have had time to reflect upon how good Grundy was at under-18s level. It wouldn't surprise me if they went back and watched the way that he played at under-18s and thought, man, we can't pass up on somebody like Jackson again, because... Yeah. it's not fair to the rest of the competition that he goes late.
Even Gawn without his knee reco would have gone about where Grundy went.
Yeah.
So Gawn was talked about as a top 20 pick in that draft. No, I think it was the 09 draft. And he had an ACL, so he got dry. He slipped back to pick 34. And really, you sit back and go, well, those two guys are so impactful in the game. And they would have gone, well, you know, one went at 34, one went at 19. But without a knee reco, you're probably looking at about roughly the same pick. Maybe Gawn, maybe in the 20s, early 20s there. But how does every club skip them once?
Yep.
So... anyway, key players for now.
Yeah, so the key players for now are pretty obvious for me. Dangerfield, Joel Selwood, Tom Hawkins, Duncan, who missed their final series. So, I mean, I don't think that should be understated that a lot of the way that the Cats played was to try to cover for Duncan. Duncan was a really key player for them all year. And a lot of the way that they played in finals was just to try to cover his absence, and it didn't work. But he's massive for them, and Stewart's the other one.
Obviously, the big change from last year's list is Tim Kelly, who would have been on there for last year.
I mean, if we were doing key players for 2019, Tim Kelly, and key players for the future, Tim Kelly. But he's gone.
Yeah, no, but I mean, more like that's the change from last year. So, because in other ones we've done. And then obviously for the future, Dangerfield, this was a bit of a debate because Dangerfield technically falls outside of our normal parameters for a future key player. But given his amazing talent, we kind of expect him to still be a real big key force for Geelong in 3 years' time. And I think it'll probably be as a 50-50 stay-at-home forward, pretty much.
Yeah, I think that he'll be able to extend his career playing down there. And obviously, Duncan and Stewart will still be key cogs. Blitzavs has shown that in the last year that he's able to be a key cog. I think that he has to be playing as a key defender, though.
Yes.
And Jordan Clark's probably the other one, which, I mean, is it... I don't know if it's a worry. It's more sort of a symptom of the way the Cats play that three of those players are defenders. The Cats love to have a strong defence that is stingy.
But this is all generated actually from their lack of strength in the middle about winning first ball. So
yeah.
Geelong used that same Chris Scott game plan of turning it over on the back and rebounding, which is why a player like Tom Stewart, Zach Tui, Jordan Clark, it's why these guys are so important, and Andrew Mackie previously, and Joel Corey Enright and Joel Corey even towards the back end of his career. The reason why all these guys have been so critical for Geelong's success is because the way they play. They rebound off the half back line and they slice you up with hard running and good foot skills. So Jordan Clark being probably one of the nicest kick of last year's drafts and also being an incredibly high athletic ability player is going to be hugely important for them going in the future. I think probably the biggest concern for me out of that list is, apart from Clark, most of those guys are mid to late 20s.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's one of the real concerns for their list as a whole. So, I mean, we do the good, the bad, the ugly. The good, they were clearly a great team this year, finished on top of the ladder, and they showed that they're still a force to be reckoned with. I mean,
good game plan, great players.
Yep. I mean, they weren't too far off a grand final berth either.
They made the most of being categorised in that middle tier of fixture.
Yep.
So because last year I think they finished after finals in seventh or something.
Yeah, must have.
They got that middle tier draw rather than the top tier draw, and they made the most of that. Especially early, I think they were two or three games clear on top at, you know, round 13, 14 area.
Yeah, they did. And, I mean, they had the best draw all year. So they're still a great team, but I expect them to come back to the pack a little bit next year. I mean, unfortunately, one of the problems with being good is that you become a target. The other thing is that Geelong are getting older. And they're not... They haven't got a whole lot coming through. So this is probably where we step into the bad is they lost Tim Kelly, who was their best developing, like best player under 25. I think it might have been 25 now. Definitely the best player in the bottom half of their age of their list.
Absolutely.
And they've got a lot of players that they've drafted in the past 5 years that are yet to prove themselves. So for all that's been talked about with Stephen Wells, and I think that Stephen Wells does do a fantastic job of being able to find people in the draft, there hasn't been many players that are young that have come through recently. Players that have definitely come in and I've gone, geez, I'd be worried about playing against these guys in 1 or 2 years' time when they're fully developed.
So I think what they're very good at is they've, and what Wells has been excellent at, is maintaining a level of performance in the list that keeps them in the finals conversation every year. And probably the symptom of that is that they do trade early picks a lot, or they, target older players to come in and they take spots of youngsters. So some of the youngsters that really need to prove themselves, we're talking guys like Charlie Constable, Jermaine Jones, if he stays on the list. We're looking at... Tom Atkins played pretty well, but he's a bit older. He was a mature age
recruit. Yeah, he's another one of those mature age recruits that they've been very successful at getting.
Yeah.
Clark, although he had a great first year, really, it's still his first year.
Yes, he's so still got to prove.
He's still got a long way to go.
There's also...
we were just talking about this guy before. What's his name?
Yeah, I can't think.
He went pick 18, 2018.
Brennan Parfitt?
No, but Parfitt's another one.
Parfitt, and you've got Nakia Cockatoo, who perennially injured. You know, you'd like to see him just get it right and see what he actually can do.
Yeah.
You know, they've got... It's not that they haven't drafted young players. It's just that, you know, opportunity for them is limited. And the problem, I think we've spoken about this before, is when people play VFL repetitively... who are high scope kids, and we leave them in the VFL, and it's a risk with like North Melbourne with Luke Davies Uniac at the moment, is that they become excellent VFL players, and then the step to AFL almost becomes hard, whereas, you know, giving them exposure early, you know, which is what they've done with Grian Myers. You know, they said to him, you know, provide pressure, tackle, chase and kick goals when you get the chance, and you'll have a spot. So he worked on his craft at VFL, did very well, got his opportunity, and because he's been able to, you know, maintain his spot inside the team that's successful, even when he hasn't played well, has meant that he's now becoming an AFL standard footballer.
Yeah, I completely agree, mate. The other guys we were talking about, Lockie Fogarty was the one we were trying to think of. But
Parsons.
Quinton Narkle fits into that boat as well. Buzzer might not be on the list anymore. Sam Simpson's been out of the side since he debuted in that first year. They took Kruger. I know that Kruger's been injured, but he, again, was overage. I think he was 19, so he might have just been an overage player rather than a full-on mature-age player. But, I'd love to see some of those players come through. And just the hold fire on Myers as well. Myers has had a great first year. Yeah. There's been a lot of Geelong players that have come through and had a good first year, especially their small forwards. I think back to Corey Gregson, Darcy Lang, guys like this that in their first season came in, and I thought, how have they found another player with one of these later, mid to late first round picks?
I just think Grian Myers is different. So, like, obviously, you and I were split on him in the draft last year. So we split on him. I know, like, I definitely liked him probably a lot more than you did. But he, it's not just his first year, it's his second AFL year, and he's broken into the team and held down a spot. And he's performing the role for the team. Like, he's never going to be anything more special than a role player, you know. But the difference is he's playing his role week in, week out. Whereas I looked up at Sydney and they got a guy who's very similar in Ben Ronk. Now, Ronk came on like a, you know, 7 goals or something in his first or second game or whatever it was, and just came on like a house on fire. And then he's lost that discipline. Sydney and Geelong are similar. They demand discipline. They demand you play your role. And Ronk stopped playing his role during the season, and he was out of the side, whereas Myers never stopped playing his role.
Yeah, then,
and,
I mean,
and that's what I like about him, and that's why I think he'll remain an AFL player.
The difference, though, is that although it's Myers' second year, it's his first year playing. And I say this with a lot of players, there's a massive difference between when all of the 22 clubs have game tape on you versus them,
yeah,
versus their great. Versus the second year that you go to play against them. Because a lot of players find that, I mean, I know that Higgins, and I hope that he's getting better, Jack Higgins, but is out with a brain bleed at the moment. But even at the start of this year, you could see that people had just watched all of his game tape and had enough notes on him now to know exactly how he plays. And that's what I'm, I guess, worried about with Myers, is just understanding his running patterns. I think his pressure will stay there. So I don't doubt that his pressure will remain. It's just whether he's able to find as much space inside forward 50, which he was able to do, get spot up, take marks inside 50. I reckon that next year it's going to be a lot harder for him.
If teams are getting down to the point of watching Grind Myers tapes to figure out how to stop Grind Myers, I'm a little bit worried, because Grind Myers is the sixth forward. So I understand what you're saying, but in terms of threat level to me,
that's, but mate, that's not a stupid comment, because he's going to get probably somebody like Maynard from Collingwood. If we're playing Geelong, he's probably going to line up on a small medium forward, I mean a small medium defender, and that player is definitely going to know that he's playing on Grind Myers, and he's going to watch all the tape that he can on him in the week up to the game. He will, like, to say that he's not, like, they're not going to watch any tape, and that's not a worry.
It's not that they're not going to watch any tape. It's just that the effort, like, you're going to put Maynard on him because you want Maynard to be the attack. Grind Myers is there, is the player that, as a coach, you put your attacking backman on. So if I'm the coach of Melbourne, I'm putting Michael Hibbert on him. Or if I'm the coach of West Coast, I'm going to find a way to get Lewis Jetter onto him. That sort of thing. Now, so what it actually means is that the incumbency is actually on Myers to respond to the player he plays on. When he got off the chain last year is when people showed him no respect. Yes, people are going to show him a little bit more respect. Yes, they may watch some game tape of him, but the player that the coach is going to send to him is likely going to be the player that they want to get the ball on his foot to get that ball moving out of the back line. And therefore, you're going to be encouraging your player as a coach to play their game, not to play Grind Myers.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree, but so, I mean, we can agree to disagree on this one, because we never agree on everything. I mean, we're looking now, that was in the bad, so the players yet to come on and prove themselves. The ugly is just that there's no developing key forwards, rucks, or key backs. And so that's a massively structural problem. So it's not like they don't have forwards and backs, because they have guys like, as we said, Myers and Clark, these types of players, but they're not structurally important. You can see how structurally important it is for them to have had Hawkins for this amount of time, and they have such a strong reliance on him that without him, their forward line looks nothing like what it should be.
Yep.
Harry Taylor, still to this day, has been a very structurally important player for them, so they can just play that Dower, lockdown, good body position, defense, and they just don't have anyone developing. So Blitzer,
Jake Collar not developing Jasny. Anymore.
Jake Collar-Jasny is probably, what, 24, 25 now?
Is he that old?
We'll have a look.
Yeah.
But, and Blitzer's would be probably 27. So he's 24. Jesus. So Collar-Jasny is 24, so he's moved out of that developing player. He's 193, so he's still the shortest of your three defenders that are going back there.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he's probably one under. He's one that you can probably say, I mean, maybe not developing, but they've definitely got a under 25 player in him.
Blitzavs is 28, and he's got a youngish body, and he's still athletic. So I mean, he can play to 31.
Asava Radicalea is obviously one of their developing players, but personally, and this is just a personal opinion, I don't see it. Asava, like, he does some nice stuff, but he just goes missing. It feels a lot like a bit like Mason Cox, really. I have the same opinion of Mason Cox as I do of Asava, and you probably disagree with me being a Collingwood fan, but I just feel that...
I completely agree with you.
Yeah, well, there you go. I just feel that he's too flash in the pan to build a side around, and especially considering Hawkins is ageing. I think with Hawkins there, you can play Radaglia, but if Hawkins goes and you're only left with Radaglia, I think that's a big issue. Now,
yeah,
brings me to what I think they're probably shaping up to do, and that's probably throw the checkbook at Jeremy Cameron. I would, if I was in Geelong's position, that's what I would be doing next year. But Asava is just not... I don't... And look, I'm happy to be proven wrong on this one, to be honest, because I know there are plenty of Geelong fans out there who really do rate him, and he is a, he's a very good, athletic player.
Definitely athletic, yeah.
And I guess with the success of Blickhouse, you know, people are thinking they can do the same, and Geelong have the one of the best development records of those mature age players in the AFL, and you know, I can see why the temptation's there, but I sit back and I go, well, that's not gonna win you a final.
No, they definitely need to, for me, they need to invest there now, just so that in 2 to 3 years time they have something there, like something of substance. A lot of people forget, and I think that this especially happens to the clubs that have been really successful over the last 20 years.
Yep.
Hawthorn and Geelong got Hawkins, who would have been pick one in his draft as father-son.
The original change in the father-son rules was driven by Tom Hawkins being drafted with like pick 46 or whatever it was.
43, yeah.
They literally said, you know, the other AFL clubs were like, how the hell can they get... Well, first it was Gary Ablett and Matt Scarlett before that, and then Tom Hawkins, who's clearly number one player in this draft,
yep,
for a pick in the 40s. So
Tom Hawkins would have been a super early pick. And
no, it would have been pick one.
It would have been, pick one. And Hawthorn, when they drafted Ruffy and Franklin, effectively set up their list to be successful. And as much as you think that, yes, you can go and attract players from other clubs and make it work, I don't necessarily think you can. Richmond, at the moment, they've still got Jack Riewoldt, who was pick 8. He was the first forward drafted in...
Pick 8? No, it wasn't, was he? No, he was taking the pick after Frawley, which was like 13.
No, Jack Riewoldt. Yeah. I thought he was pick 8, but I'll look that up now. Anyway, again, first round draft pick.
Pick 13.
So he's a first round draft pick still. What I mean is that they've got some picks this year. I think that they need to go invest in the draft and go get some tools.
Yeah, and I really think that the with those picks they've got, they could really take a scattergun approach. You know, they could look at their tools and go Sam DeConning. They could look at a Dyson Hilda. They could easily go for a Josh Smith, the Gippy boy, Emerson Jekka. You know, who's the other Worrell? Yeah.
Yep.
You know, there's plenty of guys probably from pick 15 through to pick 40 that you could, you know, roll the dice with there, and they've got a lot of picks in that bracket.
I'd still like them to see them if McCasey is still on the board.
I just don't think he will be, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if he's still on the board at 14, or if they move up and at least take somebody like him,
he'd so be ideal because he's a swing man.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't have to decide yet. And one last point, just on that Jeremy Cameron comment, was that Jeremy Cameron is from southwestern Victoria, so
he's from Dartmouth or Dartmoor or whatever it is, and that's like, it's down near Portland. So
yeah, so I mean, it's not close to Geelong, but it's closer to Geelong.
Between Adelaide and Geelong,
Closer to Geelong than anything else. Definitely, but interesting to say that one panning out off contract. So I mean, really, the off contract is players that are sort of in no man's land at the moment. So yep. Jermaine Jones, Jordan Kunico, Lockie Henderson, Tom Atkins, and Wiley Buzzer.
Yeah, probably.
I expect Atkins to get another deal.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the others will get a deal. Maybe Henderson for another year.
Yes, this is the thing. I don't think Lockie Henderson will, by the sounds of what Stephen Wells sounded like on the radio the other day. Sounds like Henderson might not get another go, with the Cats at least.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'd like to see him probably hold Jermaine Jones and then the others. Atkins and Jermaine Jones would be probably the two I would re-sign.
Yeah, I mean, I'd let go of Jones just because Jones, Cunico and Buzzer have all been there for more than 3 years now, and they haven't been able to find a spot in the team, at least consistently. So,
yeah.
Definitely, yeah. Atkins, though.
Yeah, definitely Atkins. We're agreed on that one. That was nice and quick. What we can talk about now before we go into the draft picks, because obviously we're doing this a bit later than normal, so we actually have, I guess, some real updated trades and what they've actually done. Obviously, they've lost Tim Kelly. That's the big one.
Yep.
So the Tim Kelly trade, as it was Tim Kelly sent to West Coast. So there's a three club trade. So far, stick with us. So West Coast got Tim Kelly and a future third round selection from Geelong. Essendon also sent through pick 52, and then basically Essendon got a little bit of a pick upgrade, which was pick 57 and 33, and Geelong got pick 37 from Essendon, and then from West Coast they got the King's Ransom. That's pick 14, second round pick, which is 24, and a future first round selection. So when you add all this up and you take in a few assumptions about where the picks land next year, so I think if West Coast even win the flag and everything, it pretty much values Tim Kelly as I think I said last week, as probably only second to the Chris Judd deal in terms of overall points value. It was basically works out as a pick one plus pick 55 to 30 something, depending on
where they finish
next year. So huge, huge bounty from Geelong, and gives them their best draft hand in about 10 years.
Well, gives them the best draft hand for the next 2 years, because they've got another first round draft pick for next year, yeah, as well. They also were able to turn Zach Smith, who was just ruck depth for them in the end, into Jack Stephen via pick 58. So pick 58 they received from the Gold Coast, and then sent that to St Kilda.
This is a really fantastic move in terms of the now, because Jack Stephen, fully fit and firing the way he was, not obviously the season gone, but the one before.
I reckon it's like, let's say Jack Stephen, assuming what he'll be like this year. Like, I've got some assumptions based around what I think he'll be like, which is just 5% worse than what he was like back then.
Yeah, so the 2017 Jack Stephen that won the best and fairest for St Kilda.
I reckon he's still a top five best and fairest at Geelong next year.
Absolutely. And that is a Tim Kelly direct replacement, because he offers the speed, disposal, presence around the contest. Now, yes, he is, 29, 30? I think he's 30 by the start of next season, which means that he's probably going to lose half a yard of pace, but it's still more pace than they've got at the moment. So, I mean, I don't see Geelong going backwards due to output next year. I see them going backwards due to the other competition passing them.
Yeah, same here. And their draw getting harder. So I think that when you take all that into account, they still finish in the eight, but they finish somewhere probably between third and seventh. I reckon that's sort of their range, and they're going to be competing with teams like Collingwood, Western Bulldogs, and the Giants, sort of pushing around that area. We're sort of saying West Coast and Richmond really establish themselves as the two that are challenging for the very top.
Yep.
And not to say that obviously can't all change, but that's sort of how we're seeing it at the moment.
Their picks that they've got in...
we're just looking at the picks they've got in their hand right now.
So it's 14 and 17 as well, and that's in the first round. And then they've got 24, 36 and 37. And that has them out of the draft by pick 37. So that's a really good draft hand. You've got five picks inside of 40, three inside of 30, and two in the top 20. You'd like maybe a top 10 in there, but... and I think they're in discussions with Adelaide. I think I heard Stephen Wells say you know, they've talked to Adelaide about Josh Jenkins coming in, and potentially, you know, they're probably also floating an offer for Adelaide's pick four, because Adelaide has been willing to split their pick.
That seems like a separate deal. Like, Jenkins is a separate deal to...
Yes, but I think it's that the conversations might be, obviously, with 2.5 hours left, they're probably happening very quickly. But, I mean, you can change your picks over any time between now and the draft, I think, anyway. So, I wouldn't be surprised to see if Geelong maybe bundle up 14 and 24 and try and eke out a pick 9 or something.
Well, they don't have pick 9, they've got pick 4.
No, no, but sorry. I mean, they might look to other clubs.
Ah, okay. So, man, I wouldn't be surprised if they went 14 and 17 into 4.
Yeah, so that would be a deal that I would probably take, but I'm not sure Adelaide will.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Adelaide, I would take it as well. Me too. Personally,
I would.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's the right range for both clubs to be in at this draft, but that's, as I said, that's a bit of opinion rather than...
But pick four, what do Geelong really get? I would... It's funny because I'm kind of split. Like, what do Geelong need where they need key players?
If they get pick four, they'll take Lachie Ash. They'll just add to their halfbacks.
Outside speed.
Add to their halfbacks.
I mean, look, like, that's the thing. Like, if they got... that's why I think a pick around, like, you know, pick 6 from GWS, 7, Freeman, or even Melbourne's pick 8, though, that's the area where Fisher-Mackesy will potentially go.
Yep.
So that's a really good pick for them. 14 and 17, if they hold, they could, as we've said, you know, I think there's talk of Josh Worrell up being that kind of high, but I'm not seeing it personally. But they could certainly pluck out a Will Gould at 14, hopefully.
I think Gould at 14 would be... I mean, we've said Gould for a lot of clubs, but it's really...
Every club needs a Will Gould.
Every club needs a Will Gould. He's a leader as well, which we probably didn't touch on a whole lot this year. But Geelong, I mean, I heard some interviews with Dangerfield over the trade period talking about Selwood's leadership, and just that they never really see anyone replacing him as captain until he's retired, just because he's such a fantastic leader.
Yep, that's fair.
And that's great, but they need to bring on somebody like a Will Gould who could be a future captain, just to be prepared in 2-3 years' time for when Selwood does go.
Yeah.
I mean, I could also see them at 13 and 7, or 14 and 17 being into Devin Robinson if he's still on the board.
Well, as a replacement for Joel.
As a replacement for Joel Selwood, exactly, like a battering ram mid.
Brody Kemp would definitely appeal to them.
Brody Kemp would appeal to them as a player that can play through multiple positions. Trent Rivers as a tall midfielder who can play round one. So, I mean, I think they've got a lot of people that would be in their sights for that.
And like we said, with those 24 and 36 and 37, they can probably look at guys like Josh Warrell will probably be gone, but Emerson Jecker maybe, Josh Smith, who, to be honest, I'm not sure if he's going to get drafted, but I really like him. I think he's an AFL talent.
Yeah, we like him.
You've got Sam DeConning, you've got Dyson Hilder,
Charlie Combin, maybe.
Charlie Combin would be a great ruck forward option. They could even go Nick Bryan.
Yep.
There's some really good tall talent in the 30s that they've got the right picks for. So they could quite easily target keys and really help their list in the future. And they're, you know, when we talk about the best picks being obviously, you know, Brody Grundy being at 19. I mean, if they were able to get in the top 10, maybe they get Luke Jackson, but...
Or if no one picks him in the top 10.
Yeah, 14.
Yeah, 14 would be a great pick for him. The other one...
Cooper Stephen would be handy.
Cooper Stephen at 24... I don't think you'd get him much further than that, but he's a local boy, so they'd obviously have had some more time to chat with him than with anyone else. So,
I really like Cooper Stephen for them as well, because he's just different to what they've got existing. Yeah. So, and that's a good thing. Like, difference is key. We see, you know, we've seen the effects of clubs like Melbourne and that, who have too much one pace or too much similarity between, the players inside their midfield. And Cooper Stephen really is a difference. Like, he just isn't what they've got. So, other than that, mate, last words.
Yeah, I mean, for the Cats, it would just be, I guess you've got to fulfill the life cycle of the list, which means continually, like, if for the next two to three years, you can afford to bring in players like Jack Stephen just to top up and continue competing for now.
Yep.
You just need to use all of those picks at the draft, though. You need to take serious picks at the draft in the next 2 years. So if you don't make it all the way and you don't win a premiership, that you've got something beneath that that's going to be the start of your next premiership.
Yep. Couldn't agree with you more. Pretty much saying the same thing I was going to say. Make sure the Tim Kelly situation sucks, but use it to rebuild your next premiership.
Use it to your advantage, exactly.
You've got an absolute bounty of picks now, and I really believe that from that you can definitely generate your next flag shape out of it, and really do focus on the keys, because it's just, yeah, I'm not overly enamored with what the depth is at the moment. So but with that, mate, it's been a quick one, because I think Geelong are a pretty easy club.
Well, to be fair, the next two as well, being Giants and Richmond, this is going to be post-trade period, so we normally do quite a long reflection on who's off contract, but that hasn't mattered for these clubs so much because they've made it deep into finals.
Yeah.
But we will do a bit of a reflection on, maybe we can do the Giants and Richmond as a double header. Knock them both out. We might split the episode up. We'll see how we go.
We've got a look at the 2020 draft, and we want to address a bit of what we believe is a bit of a misconception around the 2020 draft with compromise.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll get to that. We've got the trade review coming up, so there's a lot going on. So do keep listening out. Do keep engaging with us on Twitter. Thanks for everyone that's been doing that over the trade period.
And apologies for the tardiness of this, but I think we can finally reveal what's going on.
Yeah, we can. So if you've listened this deep into the podcast, you're in for a treat. Sean, tell us, what's your news, mate?
I'm starting a new job. So it's been a few months in the making, really.
Congratulations.
Thanks, mate. I do appreciate that. So it's with obviously a bub on the way, it's a lot closer to home.
Does everyone know that you put a bub on the way?
Yeah, we've announced that.
Okay. So baby on the way, new job, closer to home?
Much closer to home.
That's great.
So very, very happy with that. So it's, just had to obviously do the usual life stuff where you go for your interviews and got to let people know what you're doing and stuff. So been very lucky to work where I work, and looking forward to the new challenge. And how about you, Matt?
Yeah, well, I mean, as soon as I heard that you had a bubble on the way, I had to move closer to you, be on the right side of the city for when little baby John, my godson, is born. So
you think it's a boy? We don't even know.
You can call it Johanna if it's a girl, and it can certainly be my goddaughter. Yeah, Amy and I, my wife and I, just bought a new place on the other side of the city, so moving over to Bentley East, to be just around the corner from Shawnee now, which would be exciting. And I've also got a new job. So very exciting. Looking forward to...
Congratulations.
Thanks, mate. Been really lucky to work where I've worked, and I've got a lot of friends that will hopefully be coming to my 30th birthday, which is coming up.
Getting old.
Getting old. So... a lot of stuff has been going on for the last couple of weeks. That's probably why we've been a bit rushed with trying to get out podcasts at different times, and we've missed some weeks. It's just, I mean, Sean knows as well as anyone, like, sometimes we've just been in other places, physically unable to be able to record, or just too busy mentally with everything going on. So hopefully now that the place that we're working on is starting to settle, we'll both be starting new jobs, that we'll have a lot more time to get into this.
Yeah. So hopefully by the time we've started our new jobs, we'll be ready to do, I guess, our breakdowns and reviews of the draft and all that stuff. So that'll be pretty exciting. So it's a bit of craziness on our side. But we do appreciate you guys for sticking with us, and apologies for the tardiness of these list reviews. Last year, we were a lot more regimented and everything,
less new jobs last year, but thanks again for sticking with us, guys, and appreciate the input. So look forward to speaking with you again in the coming weeks.
See you. Sounds good. See you guys. Thank you.
If you constantly worry that the worst is going to happen, you're not alone. One in four Australians will experience anxiety. Know when anxiety's talking. Visit Beyond Blue to start a life beyond anxiety.